You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to this episode of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week is the one and only Philip Wiley, founder of the Pwn School Project, co-author of the Pen Tester Blueprint, Starting a Career as an Ethical Hacker, and is the host of not one, but two podcasts, the Hacker Factory Podcast and the Philip Wiley Show. Welcome to the podcast, Philip.
Thanks for inviting me. It's awesome to, not only is it awesome to be on your show, but to connect with other podcasters in the community.
I love it. I've been doing a lot more of that recently, just hopping on other shows, not only just talking about podcasting, but talking about, you know, the industry and all these other things. And I think it's just really great to connect with a fellow podcaster like you.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. One of the things I've noticed on my Twitter lately and Instagram is just noticing how I'm connecting with more podcasters. So that's pretty cool. And seeing some of the different podcaster communities. There's one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They're part of a larger national organization that has monthly podcast meetups.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it's amazing to me seeing how podcasting has just grown over the years. Back when I started 14 years ago, it was like, what's a podcast? Oh, that's an Apple thing, right? No, much more than an Apple thing. So I kind of wanted to start with, I had found something that was posted somewhere about your background, which I found really interesting. So you were a pro wrestler. And you had once wrestled a bear?
That's
correct. You got to tell me that story.
Yeah. The bear wrestling thing was part of a side effect of the pro wrestling experience. I was working as a bouncer at a nightclub because I couldn't make enough money wrestling because I was lucky to wrestle once a week and it didn't really pay that much, especially back then. When I first started out, I think they were paying like $70 to $5 a night. And then
wow,
by the time I quit, they were paying like $25 a match. So you went there and wrestled one match, it's only $25. So, so pretty crazy to do that and risk yourself. And there was no health insurance either. So there was no insurance that was held by the promoters. So if you got injured, you had to have health insurance or pay for it out of your own pocket. But I was working as a bouncer at this nightclub. And they had special events on Sundays because it really wasn't worth the money because they had bands on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But Sundays, it usually wasn't worth the cost of the band for an extra night. So they'd bring in different special entertainment activities in there. And so they brought this wrestling bear in and they marketed it because I was a hometown guy and I was a bouncer at nightclubs, so people knew me. So they thought if they used me to market the event that more people would show up. So it was open to anyone to wrestle the bear, but I was one of the several that wrestled the bear.
Wow. What's it like wrestling a bear?
It is pretty difficult. It was funny because the bear was like super tame, just like a really big dog, but it was like trying to move a parked car. You know, if you ever try to move like a small parked car and it's in park, it'll barely move just a little bit. And that's the way it was with the bear. It just wasn't much you could do to move the bear.
That is an amazing story. Not many people can say they wrestled a bear, and obviously you survived because you're here on the show. Yeah. Oh, wow. So how did you make that transition from wrestling bears into cybersecurity?
Yeah. So kind of even to give a little more detail why I got into wrestling. When I graduated high school, I didn't take high school seriously. So I just kind of really didn't kind of blew off classes. I went to class and the only classes I was really interested in was science classes. So the other classes I didn't do so well in, but science, I would just take notes and I would get A's on the exams because it was something I was interested in. Whenever I checked books out in school as a kid, I wouldn't get, you know, books on stories, you know, fiction novels and stuff. I would get books on science, you know? So I remember that from like an early age. So when I graduated high school, my grade point average, along with the entrance exams for the college scores weren't high enough. So I would have to get like 8 or 10 letters from my former teachers, which I probably could have gotten, but I guess my heart really wasn't into college. You know, I was finished with school and I really wasn't interested in more school. So some of my friends told me I should be a pro wrestler. So I went to wrestling school and did that. So kind of part of the reason I got out of pro wrestling is I got married and I needed a more stable career, something with benefits that's more conducive to family life. the travel is pretty outrageous with pro wrestling. And I, you know, I went to wrestling school at The Undertaker, and I know Stone Cold Steve Austin. He used to live in Denton, played at University of North Texas, and worked out the same gym. So I was in it before he was. He was smart enough to finish his college degree. But when I see documentaries on Steve Austin, you hear about him sleeping out of his car, kids from his first marriage. He hardly had any kind of relationship with them. And to see all that time he lost from his family, you know, you can't put a money value on that. And so I'm really glad that I decided to do that. So I went to a trade school to learn CAD drafting, to learn AutoCAD. Because when I was a kid, I used to like to draw a lot. And I took some drafting classes in high school, manual, old paper and pencil drafting classes. And so I thought, you know, I saw this commercial during daytime, because at the time I was working different jobs, retail sales, manual labor. At this particular time, I was working maybe at a restaurant and I had off during the day. And I noticed some of these advertisements for this trade school, the American Trades Institute. They had an AutoCAD program, because back then in the early 90s, there were a lot of engineers and architects. When they went through school, there wasn't CAD classes. CAD wasn't a thing. So there was a need for CAD drafters to help out with these architects and engineers. So I took the course and got into it. And so from drafting, I found out about sysadmin work, because I started the trade school about 92, finished around the end of 93. And I was like, when in class, I was probably the worst student with computers, because I had no exposure to computers.
Yeah.
But by the time I got done with that, I got out in the field, then my skills were a lot better than a lot of my peers. So when AutoCAD would come out with new releases, I usually picked up on the new features before my coworkers did. Windows 95 was fairly new around that time. So I was able to figure out how to get Novell printing to work through Windows 95 when some of the IT staff at work couldn't figure it out. And actually, the funny story, the first time I ever got called a hacker was one of my last jobs in AutoCAD. We had a guy on site that was not really an IT guy. He was an accountant. Our IT staff was in another town about 20 miles away at the manufacturing facility. And I figured out how to get the Novell printing to work. And he was kind of aggravated that I figured out and he didn't. So he referred to me as a hacker. So that's the first time I was ever called a hacker. But nice. That's where I got interested in. I saw one time we hired a sysadmin to come in, someone that was a certified Novell engineer come in to work on our server. We were being billed out at $30 an hour, and we're making half of that. We're making $15 an hour. So I saw this guy billing us $50 an hour. So I figured, you know, using my limited math skills, I was able to figure out, yeah, this guy's making at least, you know, $10 an hour more than I am. So I decided to teach myself how to build computers, And then I took a 90-day Novell NetWare certification course. And then I got my first job on a NetWare 411 and Windows 95 rollout.
Wow, that's so crazy. Like, we share a lot of similarities, because that was my kind of foray into IT, was Novell NetWare 411. I was also certified, went through that whole thing of setting up, the NetWare servers. And I remember the authentication pieces, because we were still on IPX SPX before TCP IP. Now that's really dating things.
Yeah.
You probably remember like token ring, man, we're really old. Jeez.
And remember trying to get the clients. I remember trying to get the clients to work on the desktops. Cause back then you'd have to put in the memory parameters. Cause you know, back then we didn't have all the memory on these systems like they do nowadays. You had to set that up just right. And plus you had to consider loading other things within the system.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as easy, the plug and play stuff of Windows 95 and newer. You had all these settings in the clients, and, you know, even like early plug and play and before plug and play, it was a lot difficult. But the interesting thing about it is, you know, for someone that's been in it as long as we have, the only way you would have been in security about that time, you would have had to been in the government or something, because everyone you see that's got more experience than that, they were doing some work for the DOD, working for the NSA or something like that, because, you know, a lot of companies didn't actually have security teams back then.
Exactly. Yeah. We didn't have, I mean, there were no security departments, none of that. And it wasn't really until I saw like Sarbanes-Oxley come out yeah. from a regulation perspective where companies were like mandated now is like, okay, you have to create an audit and security team, risk management team. And I was working at a big bank at the time, or before I went to the big bank, I was working at a real estate company. And that was how I got into security was I was the first person that, you know, they said, oh, you know something about security, right? You do all the patching, right? That's a security thing. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny too, because back then our department was called data security. It was before, well, there was some places probably call it information security, but they called our group the data security team.
Yeah, that was fascinating. Fascinating. So kind of from there, how did you start getting into like penetration testing?
Yeah. So in 2004, I moved over from my sysadmin job over to the security team. It was kind of interesting because when I moved over to the team, everyone, except we had a team that set up that did IAM before there was really IAM systems. Everyone had to manually add accounts to the different systems in the environment. And the rest of us on the team, there was probably about three or four of them setting up user accounts because it was for a mortgage company. And they had quite a few people coming in. And then when the mortgage industry would go back, you know, things would had a downturn, then they'd have to remove accounts. So there was a lot of that going on. But the team I was on, we did network security. So we did firewall, IDS. We did some vulnerability scanning and some risk assessments. And that was pretty limited to what we did. But the company hired a new CISO in 2005. And when he came in, he had more of a modern idea of how teams should be structured. So I got put on the application security team, and this is where I found out about pen testing. So I'd actually taken some pen testing courses because I think the first course I took was Foundstone's Ultimate Hacking course.
I took that
about 2004.
Yeah.
And then through being on the AppSec team, I was running web app vulnerability scans with AppScan back then. It was even before IBM bought them out. It was like WatchFire or something.
Oh,
WatchFire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow.
And so I was running the vulnerability scans, found out a little bit more about pen testing, was managing the third party pen test who had another company doing the pen test for us. So that's where I got interested in it. And then I got laid off in 2012 and I applied for a job at Verizon for a consultant role doing pen tests.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
You've had lots of different roles. How did that turn into kind of some of the training and the book writing and all of that?
Sure. That all come about in 2018. I went to work for Dallas College teaching part-time as an adjunct instructor teaching, started out teaching pen testing and then recommended web app pen testing course later on, which they added and I taught. But actually when that came about, my wife was going to school for digital forensics there and her instructor told them like in the fall of 2017, that he said in the spring, we're going to have a pen testing course. If we can find an instructor, my wife said, hey, my husband's a pen tester. He's been working it this long and all this. And he kind of blew her off. I don't think he took her very seriously. And so when I sent my resume to him, he responded about 5 minutes later, you know, sight unseen, I was hired and he was impressed with my background. And so that was really kind of a turning point for me because then I've always been a competitive person. And one of the things I'll disclaimer here, I was never the best pen tester, but always tried to work really hard to be good and be one of the best on the team wherever I was at. And I just kind of learned at that point, you know, I really enjoyed the teaching and mentoring. And shortly after that, I started the Pwn School Project, which is a meetup and is basically more geared towards entry level stuff, you know, try to educate people wanting to get into pen testing or other areas of security to educate them. And I just kind of learned during that time that, you know, we all have our strengths and I need to play towards those strengths. I'm not the best pen tester, but, you know, I would say I'd consider myself one of the best mentors or teachers. And so that's kind of what I pursued. And it's been a good experience. And I really never expected anything from it. But from doing that, being involved with the community, I've got a lot of opportunities. That, I don't know what you'd say, the universe, karma, whatever your belief system is. Yep. It's from all those things. I've been a lot happier in my life. I've had opportunities I wasn't even looking for because I've put myself out there through the community activities. People were able to find me. I got to where I was doing a, you know, frequent conference speaker, teaching workshops. Then the book came out of my first day of class lecture. I did just kind of a short little presentation, one hour presentation on what it entailed to be a pen tester and what you needed to learn to be a pen tester, which became a conference talk. And then eventually the book, The Pen Tester Blueprint.
Just kind of following your career, you've definitely been paying it forward. I think that's the right phrase for that, for sure. So thinking about people that are just starting in cybersecurity or have an interest in getting into cybersecurity, what advice would you give them?
One of the biggest pieces of advice I'd give, because, you know, there's a lot of great learning resources, but to network with people, because out of my students that got jobs, the ones that took the advice and networked had a lot easier time finding a job. And a good example I like to share, even someone with a lot of years of experience like ourselves, if we go through the normal, you know, procedure of uploading an application, a resume, or applying online, we're not guaranteed we're even going to get an interview because the algorithms, whatever keywords they're looking for. And it was interesting because back in 2017, I attended an OWASP meeting here in Dallas and the speaker worked at US Bank. And he said, if anyone's interested in a job, we're hiring pen testers at US Bank. So I talked to him, gave him my resume. He took my resume into the hiring manager. Within a week, had an interview. 2 weeks later, had a job offer. Same time, I applied for a similar role at Bank of America. And I went the normal way of applying online and I didn't hear from them until a year later. And this is after having wow. 5 years of dedicated pen testing experience, OSCP, GWAPT cert, having all that. And I didn't hear from them until like a year later, but the opportunity where I networked with someone, I got response back immediately and got a job offer out of it.
Yeah, that is such great advice and something I always tell either people I'm mentoring or when people ask me that same question of how do I get into the cybersecurity industry, it's the same thing. It's usually not what you know, but who you know is always the good way to say it. And that's why I always encourage people like go to conferences, like go to your local meetups, go to these different, you know, user groups and start talking to people. And sometimes it's difficult. And I think you've seen this too with some people that maybe are a little more introverted and, you know, they're not quite coming out of their shell or they have a lot of imposter syndrome. And I always try to remind them like, listen, I'm just like you, right? I've been in your shoes. I have imposter syndrome. I struggle with it my whole career, but it's something that you can work on. And in fact, I had one individual that I would meet at one of the local meetups because they weren't comfortable just going by themselves. And I think there's a lot of little things that we can all do to kind of help and guide them to start networking.
Yeah. And if for anyone listening too, you know, you may be introverted and shy. You know, once you found this community, you found your tribe because most of us are that way. You know, before I got into teaching and speaking at conferences and all that, I used to be terrified to speak in public, but you know, it doesn't bother me anymore. I still get imposter syndrome. I worry about whether it's good enough or not. But the thing I always remind myself, if it's good enough that someone's getting something out of it, then it's worth doing. So yeah, just get out there and people will find people that they can relate to more. It's just kind of funny because I've been part of other communities. I'm a powerlifter, so I've been part of the powerlifting community and fitness communities, and I just never clicked with a community like I have the community. And I'd say from about 2018, because I got involved in our local community in 2013, but really heavily involved in 2018 with on a more national and global scale. And I would say since 2018, I've made probably more friends and met more people in that time frame than the previous 40 some odd years of my life before that.
Wow. That's amazing. It's amazing. So I wanted to ask, what are your thoughts on kind of the current state of training and certifications? Because I think a lot of people still feel that like, oh, I got to get the certification so I can get this job, or I need my OSCP so I could be a good pen tester. Is that still a good path for most people? What's your thoughts on that?
I think the certifications are just going to get your resume noticed, get your foot in the door. Some of the best pen testers I've known of haven't even taken certification courses. One that comes to mind, I don't know if you're aware of, is Tinkersek. You may know, mm-hmm. know of him yep. from Twitter. When I met him, he was an IT recruiter, got a job as a SOC analyst, and he's like one of the best pen testers I know. But the thing he did is he just studied and learned on his own. I think one of the big mistakes people make with the certifications, they get too caught up in trying to pass the exam and not learn the content. So even if you're going through the OSCP and you just try hard enough to get through the exam, if you're not continue to practice that, continue to learn and grow, you know, your skills are going to go stagnant. It's going to be hard to get the job. But if you really understand the technology and you're interviewing with someone, even if you don't have the experience and you're able to explain how to use the tools, how you'd go about a pen test, that's going to help you. And then some of the companies, I like their hiring practices where they give someone a CTF challenge, some vulnerable box to hack into, perform a pen test to test their skills that way. I really like that method because that way you're giving people a chance that may not have a lot of experience to prove themselves.
Yeah, that's so true. And the other thing, and maybe you've noticed this is in your career as well, is people that come from diverse backgrounds, not necessarily a technology background or sometimes a completely different career field, often make some of the best pen testers that I've worked with as well. So I've had one person that I worked with was a nurse in an ER and then decided to just completely change his career and study about security and pen testing. And that guy was amazing. I have another woman that works with me who was a fine arts dealer, you know, completely not even related to anything somewhat technical, and also one of the best pen testers I've met. And a lot of it I find is because it comes down to creativity and their mindset about how they handle situations and how they've dealt with things in their life and in their career. And I always often tell people is if you can think about how a system is going to be broken, not necessarily the tool they're using or some of the technical details, I think that bodes well for people as they get into this field.
I agree. And then some of the transferable skills, like we had someone in our local community that was working as a journalist. And so she was interviewing a lot of people, and there's a lot of times that she was able to get in places where she wasn't supposed to be, get by past security, just talk her way into the places. And so at the time, her partner kind of recommended, you say, you should be a social engineer. And sure enough, she went on to be a social engineer. So a lot of cases like that. Someone works in sales, then they would probably make a good social engineer. Because one of the things too, anyone wanting to get in the industry that don't have the technical background and you have the people skills, when you go back to, you mentioned earlier, how some people are kind of shy and introverted, it's hard for people like that sometimes to do physical security or social engineering. But you take someone with the sales background that's used to talking to people, you know, they can talk their self into places that, you know, a lot of the rest of us can't. So that's sometimes a good entry point.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, Philip, this has been a great conversation. Really appreciate you coming on the show. How can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to?
Sure. They can find me on Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter and LinkedIn. But if you go to thehackermaker.com, my website, you can find links, information on my podcast, The Philip Wiley Show, and The Hacker Factory. So a lot of information that you may not find on LinkedIn or Twitter, you can find there.
Awesome. And we will have that linked in the show notes for everybody. Well, Philip, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been great having this conversation with you, and I hope we can talk more in the near future here.
Sure. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you at summer camp.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening or watching. If you like this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. To catch all the latest from the podcast, visit us at sharedsecurity.net. Follow us on Mastodon at sharedsecurity, on Twitter at sharedsec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit.